Welcome back to Fesco and Dusty on your home for Royals baseball, 96.5 The Fan.
Long time listener and supporter of you because you tell it like it is.
Here's our Royals insider, Josh Fournier.
All right, back at it here on 96.5 The Fan. Fesco and Dusty with you. Mac Morey alongside as well. And it is time to talk to our Royals insider, Josh Fournier, as we do every single Monday at this time. Vern, how you doing, my friend? You good?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. How you been?
Yeah, can't complain. Can't complain. As good as Noah Cameron's been doing over the last, couple of starts. Why did he take so long to decide to take his own career, if you will, and advocate for himself into his own hands?
I think a lot of it has to do with just the norms of baseball, right? I mean, for most of a pitcher's career, especially when you become a professional, you're used to relying on that catcher and having him kind of guide you throughout the game. But when Noah finds himself on the verge of being sent to AAA, honestly, if it wasn't for the injuries left and right in this rotation, Noah may have been optioned down to Omaha earlier in this season. But because of those injuries, he stuck around. He also has self-awareness. So he understood that, A, I'm struggling. B, the organization is starting to get fed up with my struggles. So much so that they're putting Beck Way in front of me, right? Beck Way serving as an opener in front of Noah Cameron. So he, like you said, takes charge of his career. And, you know, with the pitch clock and the pitch calm, right, knowing that the pitchers can call their own pitches, that also lends itself to, like we see with Lugo, like we see with Waka, the pitchers calling their own pitches. So, why did it take so long? I would say partially just because that's baseball, but maybe even larger because the technology now makes it so much easier and almost demands it, right? And because of that pitch clock, you can't be hemming and hawing and shaking and no, next pitch, no, next pitch. You need to get up there with conviction and throw it. And how can you be more convicted than calling your own pitches? So credit to Noah Cameron for putting even more pressure on his shoulders, because to me, there isn't a more culpable baseball player than the starting pitcher calling his own pitches. There's nobody that says, put all the pressure on me, more so than a pitcher doing that. And since Noah Cameron made that decision with the guidance of the coaching staff, he's been statistically the best pitcher in Major League Baseball. So much so that for the first time last night on the postgame show, I'm wondering, is Noah Cameron a top three pitcher on a contending team? I'm not there yet. Some Royals fans are. I need to see what he does in these final six starts. But man, how nice of a feeling would that be to get to the offseason and feel confident that Noah Cameron can be one of your top three arms?
Vern, you know, it would be outstanding to answer your question, but I guess now with the technology that we have, and you make a great point on that as well, it kind of changes everything. Why don't we have more pitchers calling their own games? Because they know how they feel. Like, you no matter what the
and
catcher
says. You can read
says, the
hitter.
Yeah,
right. You can read the hitter swings from that spot on the mound.
Yeah, so I think it makes a lot of sense now with the pitch com to allow these guys to go out there, because I do. I want a pitcher throwing a pitch that he is convicted with, not a pitch that somebody else is telling him to throw that maybe he just doesn't feel comfortable in throwing today.
Well, some pitchers don't put in the same amount of work that Noah Cameron does in between starts. And you have to imagine that he has learned quite a bit from Michael Waka, who is the most diligent worker in between starts that I've ever seen at the big league level. So first and foremost is, you know, not everyone is as dialed in, as hardworking, as studious as Noah Cameron. There's also some guys that are, you know, I always think of Matt Strom, now the former Royal. He would talk about, I like being brain dead out there on the mound. I want my catcher to tell me what to throw because I'm confident in everything. So I want someone to guide me. I don't want to think too much. I just want to react and do what comes natural. So you also have that faction of big league pitchers that have always been guided by a catcher. Or, shoot, you know, sometimes the catcher is smarter, right? And that's not to knock Carter Jensen or Salvi or Luke Maley. That's a reflection of just how much work you're seeing Lugo and Waka and Cameron put in between starts. But, you know, youth, inexperience, a lack of knowledge, plenty of reasons as to why a young pitcher wouldn't necessarily feel the type of confidence, wouldn't feel as prepared as you would certainly need to be to say, hey, catch, thanks, but no thanks, I got this one.
90% confidence, 10% skill. Yeah, so Vern, let's have a conversation about my guy, Jack Caglione. What have you seen since the All-Star break what this unit has really done at the plate?
Well, you know, I think the best way to answer that is, you know, Jack Caglione is drafted in July of 2024. He is called up, rushed up to the big leagues. He's called up to the big leagues in 2025, June of 2025. So less than a year after being drafted, he's in the big leagues. And if you go back to the beginning of June 1st, Cags is one of the 10 best hitters in Major League Baseball. So he's drafted in July of 2024, makes it to the big leagues in 11 months, and 12 months after that, he's one of the 10 best hitters in Major League Baseball, or starting a run in which he's going to become one of the 10 best hitters in Major League Baseball. So I don't think anything really clicked other than experience, confidence, failure, work and repetition. Again, in 1 year, less than 2 years after being at the University of Florida, the guy is everything you wanted him to be, maybe more, but he's everything that you hoped he would be. So I hate, there's just no way it was a tweak. To me, it's just the natural progression of an uber-talented possible superstar in this game. Now, you want to get nerdy about it. You heard Seth Lugo this weekend talk about, you know, Cags, again, because of that experience, understands that pitchers are now preying on his aggressiveness. That's why, and we've known that. We've known that Cags is always going to expand the zone because he's such a big, strong dude that he doesn't need to stay married to the strike zone. But he was expanding a tad bit too much. And teams were feasting on that aggressiveness, but he's been able to rein it in. And I think that was always expected. Again, he's just too good, too talented, too strong to not be one of the best, not just on the team, but one of the best in the American League. And here we are with 30-some-odd games to go, and he has a chance to wrap this season up as, you know, the best hitter on this team, which is saying something because 2 years ago, Bobby Witt Jr. was viewed as the best all-around player in Major League Baseball. And his bat was a big reason why, but, you know, 2 years later, Jack Caglione might be the best hitter on this team moving forward.
Am I hyperbolic to say he's going to be the Royals Player of the Year?
No. I mean, he's been there. Mm-hmm. Game one, you know, well, knock on wood, hopefully up until game 162. And, you know, the longer I'm around the game, I appreciate the guys that post every single day. I appreciate the pitchers that take the ball and eat up innings more than ever. So he's likely to end the season with the most home runs. He could catch and pass Bobby for the most base hits. He could have the best OPS on the team and the most RBI and the most extra base hits. He's been a fine defender. I mean, you saw the base running this road trip was also extraordinary. Yeah, he's got an outstanding case. The only defense that Bobby has is I'm the best shortstop in all of baseball. Not to mention, even though I didn't need a rehab assignment and I hit the IL, he's come back and he's still, you know, Bobby Witt Jr., still batting .304 since returning from the injured list, 12 runs in 12 games. So Bob's still one of the five best players on the planet. The only reason I would give that award to Cags is because he hasn't missed any time.
What does the organization have to do this offseason, though, to make sure that Bobby and Cags are happy and do want to be here long term? How do we start moving that forward now, Vern?
I think the same way to make you happy and to make Dusty happy, and that is give us some pitching. Give us a real reason to believe that this team can compete in the American League Central. And I hate to consistently assume that the division's going to be down and that a 500 record's going to be good enough to do it.
Right.
But you know what? Fine. I'll go along with that. I still need a lot of pitching to believe that the Royals can compete in a average American League Central. You know, if Bobby, Cags, you know, they have Carter, they have Vinny, hopefully Mike Cal, hopefully those guys are all coming back over the course of this homestand. Yeah, I don't think that those guys look around and say we need help in the lineup or defensively or on the base paths, but the numbers scream we need help pitching-wise. And as we've talked about for the past few weeks, it certainly seems as if this organization believes they can make the type of moves to improve this pitching staff and get them back into contention in 2027. I'll tell you what, I don't know if I buy it, but Noah Cameron, obviously if this continues, it would be a big help for the team next season. It's just, I'm sorry, I've just never viewed Noah Cameron as a guy that you give the ball to in the postseason. I always viewed him as a guy that helps you get through 162, can eat up a lot of innings, and can be a key contributor to a winning ball club. But giving him the ball in a playoff game, he's that now? I'm not there yet, but boy, I can't wait to watch his next start against the Detroit Tigers.
So we know that there's the contract of Bobby Witt Jr. that has the opt-out. What does... Gosh, such a horrible loaded question. Obviously, the lockout is a possibility. Obviously, the superstardom of Jack Caglione is fully engaged. Having him stick around for the next 7 to 8 years and giving him that contract, you've got to think maybe that's something that shows Bobby Witt Jr., hey, this team's serious.
Yeah, I think Bobby's contract that he received showed him that this team is serious. That spits in the face of what this organization normally does. But yeah, if they were able to break off a deal for Cags, that number would be eye-popping. And honestly, I don't think Cags would sign right now. Yeah, I wouldn't either. If I was advising him. Because if I'm Jack Caglione, shoot, man, I think I could hit the All-Star break next year with 20, 25 home runs, and I could be an All-Star. And, man, if I can do that on the heels of what I've done here in the second half of the season, you know, that's basically a 162-game stretch of me being a 40, 50 home run guy, and that's going to add another $100, $200 million to my contract. So if I'm Cags, I'm waiting, right? Because you see what J.J. Weatherholt and Connor Griffin and a few other of his draft class mates received. If I'm Cags, I think I'm better than all these dudes, and I want a lot more money. So maybe next offseason for Cags. But, yeah, if I'm Bobby Witt Jr. and I see the Royals break off another nine-figure deal for a 23-year-old, you just don't see Cleveland or Milwaukee. You don't see Tampa. You don't see the consistently good small-market teams. Doing things like that. So, yeah, if the Royals were able to convince Cags to fork over a few of his free agent seasons, no doubt that would get the whole city juiced.
Yeah, I just don't think that's a smart move by the Royals right now, based on where they are in this current system of baseball. Yeah. Like, they've got so many
uncertainty.
Got so many other needs, Vern. Like, I think even talking to Cags after this season about a long-term contract is stupid, because I don't think it's money well spent at this time with where the organization is.
And, yeah, the uncertainty of, I don't think that they're going to win and get a salary cap, but if they do, you're already given Seth Lugo $20 million next year and likely another $20 million in 2028. Bobby Witt Jr.'s contract's going to jump up to $30 million in 2028. Mikel Garcia is going to be north of $10 million in 2028. I mean, these are
big numbers, dude.
Yeah, big numbers for Kansas City. Now, I'm not trying to, pinch pennies for John Sherman, but I'm also not an idiot. Those are huge numbers, at least in the 20 years, I've 15 years I've been covering this team. So if you throw in a $10 million, $15 million for Jack Caglione, John Sherman's really about throwing that money around. I just don't see it.
As long if you want to sign these guys, fine. But as long as it doesn't take away from doing the other things that are necessary to build a ball club is where I am with that.
100%. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because the moment they say, hey, well, we couldn't finish off this bullpen because of Bobby's contract, that's when we revolt.
That's exactly right.
That's when you get angry. Well, you're like, hold on. Are we in this to win, or are we – pinching pennies here. Yeah, once you start saying, hey, remember how we celebrated all these contracts? Well, now these contracts are the reasons why we're losing. Once that happens, well, then yeah, the entire plan of the front office and the organization starts to blow up.
So when you, I guess, when we see this team moving forward, because, you know, to, you know, in this market to get guys, you're going to have to give up guys, is Vinny safe and is Blake Mitchell safe?
No, but I wouldn't think that if you are so very dead set on winning in 2027, nobody should really be safe outside of those top three hitters, the 23-year-old Jensen Caglione and the great Bobby Witt Jr., everybody else. Mm-hmm. But as far as Vinny, see, to me, the issue with Vinny is this. Hopefully he's back tonight. But I have absolutely zero expectations for Vinny offensively in this final month of the season. You know, I've just seen this hamate surgery. When it happens in season, guys, I just struggle to find guys that pick it back up mm-hmm. offensively. Jose Ramirez hasn't been the same, and I'm listening to their play-by-play announcer, the Hall of Famer Tom Hamilton, talk about how Ramirez isn't going to be the Hall of Famer Jose Ramirez for the rest of the season. Not after that surgery. Guys just don't feel comfortable. They don't not only do they not feel comfortable, I mean, there's also a pain in the wrist that they feel when they're at the dish, when they're out there defensively. I remember Blake Mitchell last year. He also dealt with the hamate bone surgery and wasn't the same. So, you know, I don't think that Vinny can get his trade value back to a place, certainly not to where it was last offseason. And if I'm the Royals in this small market that you acknowledge, I don't think it's smart to trade someone when their stock is low. And I can't imagine how Vinny can get his stock back to a place where this offseason is the time to move him. You know, maybe next offseason, maybe next trade deadline. But, you know, him and Michael, I'm not opposed to using them as trade bait, but I'm not going to get with the idea of moving them when their stock is, you know, Vinny's stock is as low maybe as it's been, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's his worst season. Michael's stock with a hand injury, that stock is low. So, no, those two shouldn't feel safe. The only reason they should is because of those injuries and because of that lowered stock. Blake Mitchell, you know, his stock has taken a hit, but he's a prospect, and, you know, you can deal with that. Any prospect, I'd be willing to move. You know, Reed Detmers was a guy that I was talking about going into that start on Saturday, saying, Royals fans, keep your eye on this guy. He's got 2 years left of team control. I would love to see the Royals make an acquisition of Reed Detmers, and then he went out there and struck out 11. 2 years of team control for Detmers. I'd give up one of your top pitching prospects. I'd give up Blake Mitchell. You bring him here with a Waka, a Lugo, a Noah Cameron. Okay, you're starting to make me feel a little bit better about 27 and 20.
Well, and to the Angels with a new, you know, general manager, I mean, you would have to think everything on that roster is kind of open for, you know, debate and having conversations about. And so I would absolutely be out there fishing in the Anaheim pool if I were the Royals at this point in time. But you'd made a kind of an offhand comment, Vernon. I wanted to circle back to it. You don't think there's going to be a salary cap by the time this is all said and done?
I would just be surprised. I'd be shocked if the union, if ownership was able to break this union, right? It's the last one that's still standing strong. You know, they have plenty of evidence on their side, right? The Yankees just take on some private equity that has them valued north of $10 billion. I know the Yankees and Dodgers are playing different games, but if I'm the union, no, they're playing the same game. You guys are making plenty of money. We don't need a salary cap. It's going to cost us billions of dollars. Now, I get the argument for a cap and a floor and how it could better the game. My only pushback to that is I don't think baseball can rise any higher than where it stands currently in our American entertainment landscape. I think baseball, just like the NBA and the NHL and MLS, they are where they're always going to be, if not, you know, if anything, they're going to drop. But I think all those sports are what they're always going to be because the NFL's only getting bigger day by day.
So, Vern, what happens then if there is no salary cap and salary floor? How does this whole thing end up? And if they do miss a lot of time, how do you win your fans back if you do come back after an extended period of time with no cap or floor?
No kidding. Yeah. Yeah. I'm frightened to see how it goes. I'm wondering how long the game of chicken will last for the owners, but it really comes down to them. How dead set are they on the salary cap, on the salary floor? Do they capitulate, you know, as we get towards the end of March into April? We'll see. I'm not silly enough to think that this season's going to start on time, but I still believe we'll play the All-Star game. I certainly believe we'll still have the postseason. And honestly, I don't think owners care all that much if we miss the first month of the year. The weather's terrible.
Then lop it off to begin with. Anyway. Then let's just get rid of 30 games to start with the season.
Please.
Yeah, right?
I mean, I'm with that.
Yeah, if the owners don't care, then get rid of them.
I capitulate to that.
I agree. You know I'm with that. 162 doesn't make sense.
No, not anymore. It doesn't.
You know what also doesn't make sense is your major league debut and you hit three bombs.
In the first pitch. Swing, home run. Obviously, there's a lot of money to be made, but how boss would it be? Hit that home run and never pick up a bat again.
Yeah, it's like if I ever get a hole in one, Vern, I'm done. I kid.
That's not true.
No, it's not. I'm addicted to everything in life, including you. But no, I thought it was cool. Did you hear the story about how the bee was following him around the whole day?
So no, I saw a picture of him hugging his ma.
Yeah, so he lost his father. He lost his father, right? And then the whole day, there's like this bee that's following him around, and you know, connect the dots. I thought that was
I love that stuff,
right? And that's just baseball 101. Right? Yeah. Not only that, Cardinals player in Wrigley, biggest rival, 3 home runs debut. I don't know how it gets any better than that.
Oh man, that bee! I didn't know about that. I love that.
It's a good story.
Love that, especially you know, if him and his old man, if they had, you know, they kind of needled each other. How sweet would that be?
Oh, it's insane, man.
Yeah, that's awesome.
All right, man. I didn't look. Is Kurt still out?
Is who?
Nick Kurtz, because I know the A's are coming.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, yeah. Oh, Royals are huge favorites tonight.
So I have a chance to redeem myself?
Well, I don't know, because the guy starting for the A's is the guy you gave up to acquire Lucas Urseg, so I'm sure he has a redemption.
Who is that?
Mason Barnett.
Never heard of him.
Yeah, he's up. But yeah, I really wanted to see Kurtz do BP, and then Cags do BP, because, you know, the storyline that follows those two guys' career the rest of time. I mean, could you imagine that in Kauffman Stadium?
And Mason Barnett is a righty, so Cags could get real nice tonight.
Oh, okay, I'm going to get on my app right now. Vern, we appreciate it. I'll see you Thursday, buddy, and then I'll come by tomorrow night and say hi to you
All right, guys. Appreciate it as always. Thank you.
Love you.
See you, Vern.
Capitulate. I like that word.
Capitulate.
I'm going to save that for the rest of time. To surrender. To give in. To end resistance.
Capitulate.
Did you know that word?
Mm-hmm.
I forget how smart you guys are. Did you know that word?
Gosh, I did know that one.
All right, I'll go get educated. We'll get back on the other side here at 96.5 The Fan. You're home for
Capitulate.
Good morning, Kansas City. It's Noah Williams, and you're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your home for the Chiefs, 96.5 The Fan.